Okay.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to the committee. I know we had a late night last night, and folks will probably be coming in a little more slowly than usual, but I wanted to get started because we probably have a lot of discussion that we need to have. The reason for this hearing is that there was a proposal by the PCA to for the legislature to issue $15 million in bonds to do a proposal to clean up the Washington County landfill. The problem is, too, that we still do not hear a determination of what should be done to the landfill, because the community seems to want things that are different than the PCA wants, and so we need to hear from the community, and we didn't have an opportunity to do that before the bonding bill left this committee. And the second question is, how are we going to fund not just this landfill cleanup, but the rest of them? You can't just take one and do one. So, and the final issue I think needs to be put on the table is that there was, when the landfill cleanup bill was enacted in the mid-90s, there was a cap of $90 million in bonding put in that program. And the reason for that was there was a feeling that future generations should not be paying for something that was created by past generations. So the beneficiaries of the landfill cleanup program, that is, all the people who were being sued back and forth, should be the ones paying for that, for the cleanup program. And there were many beneficiaries, many companies, many cities, many towns that were huge beneficiaries of the landfill cleanup program, because all the lawsuits were taken away and probably saved in the neighborhood of $400 million. So that's why folks agreed to a higher waste management fee to pay for this particular program. So with that background, this is the procedure we're going to take. We're going to hear from the community and what the community believes needs to be done. We're going to hear from PCA what they believe needs to be done, and we're also going to put all the facts, figures on the table, because we know there's not enough money in the pot right now. So, and then there we will have an opportunity for other folks to testify. We call 3M, let them know about this hearing, because obviously one of the big issues is what was the contamination that was put in the landfill by 3M. So then we will open it up for other folks in the audience who might have other solutions. So with that, Representative Bunn, welcome to the committee. This is a hard issue for you to deal with, and I appreciate your taking so much time and bringing your community to visit with us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and just I'm Julie Bunn, State Representative from House District 56A, and the East Metro that runs from Stillwater down to the northeast corner of Woodbury. Have to bear with me a little bit this morning. I've been sick for about a week and a half, and I was chairing a licensing committee last night till 10 o'clock, so I'm a little bit under the weather, so I have to pause a little bit more than I usually do in terms of gathering my thoughts this morning. In terms of general background, to link it to the big picture, this landfill is one among several landfills in the East Metro that have been determined to contain PFCs. You've all heard about this issue. It's actually been around for a number of years, but it emerged in a larger form last January at the outside of session with the discovery of a new member of the PFC family, PFDA, found in a large area in Washington County, in particular in South Washington County. The landfills that, among the landfills we know are involved with PFC contamination are this landfill called the Washington County Closed Landfill, which is physically situated in the community of Lake Elmo, my hometown, and it is a landfill under the control of the state of Minnesota, due to the passage of the 1994 closed landfill program. The other three, just so we don't get confused, if you've heard about other landfills that are being addressed via the mediation agreement that 3M signed with the Pollution Control Agency last spring, are the Oakdale, Woodbury, and Cottage Grove landfills. And those three landfills, 3M will be entirely responsible for remediating. They've put together possible remediation proposals. There's been public hearings, all of that. And the PCA will be determining in the end what they will be required to do to clean up those other sites. So we are talking about this northern landfill called the Washington County Closed Landfill. That is a state responsibility at this time. What has this landfill, I'll have somebody else in it and give a little bit more history on it, but these the plume from this landfill, first of all, this landfill has waste that was disposed starting in the 1960s up to, I believe, the early 70s. It is waste from a whole variety of sources, corporations in the area, cities, fire departments, University of Minnesota, the Department of Corrections, a whole variety of folks disposed in this landfill over those years. It originally was a gravel pit in that community. There's information contained in this in one of the documents that there's aerial photography showing at the time that this was a gravel pit being considered or going to be used for a landfill. There was standing water in the gravel pit. We have in the PCA's own documents that you're given this morning that this waste is partially, it's an unlined landfill, is partially sitting in the water. So this mixed waste that's in there is currently, I'm not sure if I use that mixed waste term correctly, technically, but is, you know, is in the groundwater partially, or is in the water, is in some water. So it's old, very old mixed waste with a lot of soil and everything else mixed in with it. PFCs have, and other chemicals, they've been remediating this site for VOCs for a number of years, so that's not the only problem that PFCs. CFCs are creating a plume from this site throughout large portions of Lake Elmo, possibly over in Oakdale a little bit as well, and also the northern portion of Woodbury is being polluted from this site. These other portions of Woodbury South, we believe the PFCs are coming from the Oakdale, you know, and Woodbury sites. So there's multiple plumes here from these sites. The question here now is before us is how to remediate this. It's been in the control of the MPCA, this site, for many years. They have been doing remediation on VOCs and other aspects of this site. They capped it one time, etc. So now with the PFC issue and also continuing issues with VOCs as well, my understanding is that even that remediation would need further upgrading and other efforts at this time. They're now proposing, you know, more significant remediation of this site. There have been a couple of meetings in the community related to this. On November 15th, there was an initial meeting where the PCA presented to the citizens directly adjacent to the site, the small members of, you know, subs of the community, kind of an advanced preview in a public meeting of the options that were looked at by the consultant, and also presented their preferred option that they desired to move forward with and got some feedback. The very next day, I believe, they met with the city officials in Lake Elmo to give them the same kind of preview of that. Subsequently, there was additional meetings with city officials and in the city council going over those that preview of remediation options and also presenting their preferred option. And then just this last Thursday was the official public hearing for the entire, you know, community area at a local junior high school where there was the large public hearing. So as you say, one of our challenges with this is it's kind of in process as we're also trying to legislate around it. So it's complicated in that regard that the community is really just hearing all this as well. I would like to go, my primary concerns are one, that the state lives up to its legal responsibility to care for and manage the site, protect the public health. Secondly, based on hearing of my own preference, I live in this community as well, but also the citizens, to have as permanent and as secure a solution as possible for not only that community but for the state, one that looks to the long run to try to resolve this problem. Secondly, that there's adequate public involvement in that decision-making and legislative involvement in that decision-making. And third, that if this program, which we'll be addressing in the second half, is not adequately funded or set up to both deal with this site or the many other sites that still remain in this program that need attention, I believe this is one of, slightly over 100, I've heard up to 112 at one time, sites in the closed landfill program. I think over 50 of them have been remediated or, constructed in some way, but there are more to come. That we deal with this responsibly as a state and address it and solve this problem. A few other points about the unique nature of this situation. Number one, while there are a few other sites in this program that are impacting drinking water, I've heard different numbers. I've heard 2, 8, and I've heard 12 that affect drinking water, so maybe they can give us a definitive answer. In one document, I saw conflicting numbers even on that at one time. So a number of other sites in this program have pollution affecting drinking water. I do believe, though, that this site is affecting more households in terms of drinking water than any other site in the program. They can confirm that or not. But at this time, we're talking about 20-30 square miles from this one particular plume.
Excuse me, would you repeat that? Is just that how many?
Sites affecting drinking water?
Yes. You were talking about how many miles?
On this northern plume, a figure I believe I had was about 20 square miles area being affected from this site and the Lake Elmo and Woodbury area.
20 square miles.
Yes. And in the other plumes for the southern part, at one point I heard 99 square miles for all of it. My more recent figures are somewhat lower than that. So I think 20 and 40 or 20 and 50 square miles.
Now, is that just with the PFC family or also with the volatiles?
I will ask MPCA to answer that, but I believe this is primarily with the PFC family because they move so readily through water. Would you like to answer that now?
No, that's one of the questions I hope answers
yes.
when they come up.
Yes.
Okay. More a huge plume.
Yes, it's a very large plume, and I also believe that the volatile organics they've been remediating for some time, they're pumping at the site to extract those, and they have the technology to remove them, like going into the air, et cetera, at the site for a number of years now. So they may be removing them from the downstream plume, those VOCs. That process that they use for the VOCs, though, many believe has contributed to the PFC spread, and that's another part of the story. The remediations that have occurred may have actually exacerbated the other problem with PFCs. So unbeknownst to them, unintentional at the time, not knowing they had the PFC issue at that time, but that appears to be a side consequence of the remediation efforts for the other chemical, that they may have spread the PFCs further, and others can explain why that might have occurred. Lost my train of thought there. So the other point I was going to make regarding this is my understanding is in terms of the overall history of this program, other landfill remediations have been at max in the $2 to $3 million range to complete the remediation of that site, or at least the capital cost of that site. So when we're talking now about $23 million, or some of the remediation options go up to $200 million that were put forward, we're talking a whole other situation now that the legislature in this program has not dealt with before. The cost of this particular site is a significant magnitude larger than previous sites that have had been remediated at this time. So it is unique in that way as well. Okay, at this time, I had a particular order we wanted to go through in terms of bringing up the community, but we are going to go slightly out of order for that because our members from Woodbury need to leave early. Present here today, these are the types of people we are here today, we have from the city of Lake Elmo, we have the mayor, the city administrator, they're not all going to talk. I'm just going to tell you who's here right now. A city council member and a citizen who lives adjacent to the site has lived there for many, many years. From Woodbury, we have the mayor and the city administrator, and from Oakdale, we have a city administrator there as well. We are going to start with the mayor of Woodbury to talk about why Woodbury is involved in this and what their position is at this time regarding what we're doing.
Welcome to the committee, and I want you to put your name on the record, but I also wanted to thank other members of the community for coming, even though you may not be testifying. It's important for us to have an understanding of this issue before we move to try to fix it. So we appreciate you coming.
My name is Bill Hargis. I'm mayor of Woodbury. I've also lived in the east side of St. Paul and Oakdale and Woodbury since 1971, and fellowship to the church in St. Elmo. I'm well aware of this issue just from my history, and I'm well aware of the landfill when it was open and then when it was closed. And I have to say, everything we hear about the landfill, the worst in the news, kind of getting worse, and nothing seems to ever getting solved. Our primary responsibility as the city of Woodbury is the safety of our community. One of the fundamental resources we provide is drinking water. It was a real surprise to me and saddened me when in January of last year when we found the PFBAs in the Woodbury water. I empathized with part of that, empathized with our folks in Oakdale and Lake Elmo having to deal with this issue, and was thankful that we didn't have to deal with that in Woodbury. But now we need to deal with that, and what my goal is, our goal as a city, is the top priority issue is the safety of our community, 60,000 people, and we've made this our top priority. You know, safe and clean drinking water is a fundamental expectation of our citizens, of our government. This particular issue has its legal complications, its history, but I think it's fairly clear from the 94 legislation that it's the state's responsibility. We are requiring, you know, really relying on the health department, the PCA, and you to do the right thing here and kind of get to a solution. So 50 years from now, or my successor as mayor is not here, asking the legislature to deal with it. So we would urge you to obviously do your due diligence, but do the right thing, and we need to do something, because this problem is not going to get any better, and as the science evolves, I'm sure the news will not be better, and it's really no comfort because this chemical does not naturally occur in our drinking water. So that's basically the city of Woodbury's position, and I would assure you that it is our top priority and is a concern. We're being patient to let the process work, but we do need to make the step forward and you know, do something. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for your time.
Would you stay here for just a moment, Mayor Hargis and Minister Gridley? While you're here, Madam Chair, may I ask them a quick follow-up to specify something?
We want here to understand what's going on.
One point I want to make why this is so crucial to Woodbury is, you know, Oakdale has been dealing with PFC issues for a number of years. They've installed a central carbon filter system that's a very expensive central city system. They had a system for their water system such that was possible to do. Lake Elmo has done a combination of, fortunately, some of their wells are actually not in this area. They're in the other corner of the city that is not affected by the plume, thank goodness, and so they've been able to hook some people up to that other water source, but there are also people on individual household filters and some bottled water. Woodbury, though, and Mayor or Minister Gridley, I appreciate you comment on this, has a much more complex situation in that my understanding is not possible for them to have these central water systems to take care of this for their water supply. It's not an option for them at this time the way it's constructed. So if it was to be remediated at all without long-term cleanup, it would have to be like an individual point source household business level and not centrally at this time. So if you could comment on that issue, how important this is to your water sources for the city.
Quint Gridley, City Administrator. Thank you, Representative Bond. As mentioned, we have about 36 square miles in Woodbury. It's a very large system. Not all of our city is served. So approximately of our 57,000, we have around 50,000 residents that are served by our water. To have some sort of treatment system, we'd have to have approximately 3 treatment plants because of how the city is laid out. So if we had a single treatment plant, maybe that's more impossible. With 3, it becomes much more complicated. As I understand it, that this chemical is very water soluble, and it is very difficult to collect in a filter system. So it's not only the aspect of how many treatment plants you would have to have, but it's your ability to, from a long period of standpoint, be able to collect that material and to dispose of it. So there's the 2 aspects of how do we hook up our system, and then what type of filter system can we use for PFCs to protect and clean the drinking water.
Superintendent Gartner has a question. We will be taking questions as we go, just because it's helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just explain that you say you have 3 treatment plants. Does that mean you have 3, say, high-capacity groundwater wells? Is that what you mean?
No, we would have to, if we were to do a treatment plant system, we would have to create 3. We currently have 16 wells, and we're adding to that. But given the topography and given the layout of the city, if we were to have a water treatment facility, we would have to have it in 3 different locations. That's what I'm expressing. We currently do not have a water treatment facility.
Just to follow up to that point, then, so the contaminations in the aquifer that you're those wells are in, this isn't just dealing with household drinking water wells in a shallow aquifer.
That is correct. In fact, in all 16 of our wells, PFCA is showing up to a greater or lesser extent. And then we have a significant number of residents that are on private wells that do not, that also are showing the PFCA chemical.
And which aquifer is, are they all in the same aquifer?
That is correct.
In all the aquifers. This chemical is, we have.
But it's one aquifer?
Do you know the name of the?
It's one aquifer. I think we go down to the Prairie de Chien aquifer.
That's a drinking water source. I think one of the things we need to understand is how many other folks besides your community drink from the Prairie de Chien. I mean, that's, this is unfortunately a larger issue than you all are, and that's a, gives us a problem. Representative Ann.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know, and can you tell us approximately how many private residential wells are impacted in addition to the municipal part of the problem?
I'm not aware of. I know the PCA has been out testing, but I'm not even sure how many private wells we have in the city of Woodbury, but it's a significant number because just about half our community is developed in part of the municipal system, and the closer they are to the Woodbury 3M landfills, that I know they have higher concentrations. So the source of the contamination in our boom is up as the Washington County landfill and sites up in Oakdale as well as the Woodbury site. So.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to
see? We can get to that information.
Yeah, I think it would be helpful to know how, you know, we're trying to still get a scope of this.
Would you like them to come up now? While they're coming up?
Well, no, go ahead.
Oh, later?
Testimony.
Okay. One thing I do know, for the Lake Elmo area, actually, there is a well advisory area that's been formed, so they cannot drill wells any longer this area, or if they can under very specific, like really, really, really deep, so to a different aquifer. So there are serious restrictions on any new wells in this area. There is a formal well advisory area, so new building or would have to hook up the city water, or they'd have to be an alternate, you know, and the homes that are currently in that area cannot use their wells any longer. So, yeah. Any other questions for our Woodbury folks over here? No? Well, thank you very much, Mayor.
Yeah, thank
City
you.
Administrator.
Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to have Lake Elmo resident Jim Blackford come up. While he's coming up, I'd like, Jim is a long-term resident of Lake Elmo. He's a professional. He's been following this issue for years and years, as his resident is directly adjacent to this landfill site. He has lots, he's been doing lots of work on understanding these issues. I specifically, just so he knows, would like him to get, in your packet is a document. It starts on page 8 in your packet, is a written document of his view of where the government has failed the citizens on this landfill. He's been very articulate at several meetings about this, and MCC may have some issues with some points, but I think much of it is generally accurate in terms of giving the history. Just for your information, Jim, after you speak, I'm going to go into this feasibility document and kind of some of the other options, so you don't have to fully go into that. You can add to me if you want to stay here, and after I give some comments on that, but why don't you give more your perspective as a resident, what's going on since the intimidation, since this fight began.
Thank you for having me here today. I apologize for my voice.
Just put your name on the record, so that's great. The system picks up.
Sure. My name is Jim Blackford. I live in Lake Elmo, Minnesota. And if you drew a line from the center of the landfill east, our home would be the first home east of the landfill. And my wife's family has lived in the area for many, many years. They owned the Hymation property site in Oakdale, and then they also had this property east of the landfill. And they owned the property in the 50s before the landfill was built. Excuse me. So they are long-term residents of the area, and my wife and I built a home on that site next to her brother. And felt it was a good place to have a family and raise kids. And again, as you're looking at me today, please consider the thousands of people that are impacted. It's not me, it's thousands of people that are impacted by this. So we built our home, and we tried to stay up on what was happening with the landfill. And we had our water tested. I have additional documents showing that we had our water tested starting in the 80s when we heard about the issues. Unfortunately,
excuse me, when you heard about the issues, what do you mean? From the landfill?
Washington County started to send out notices saying there was some leakage off the site.
Okay.
And we were concerned, so we had our water tested. But unfortunately, I have a document prepared by 3M from that time period in 1980 that says that when they found the Oakdale waste, they had cooperated with the MCCA and told them exactly what was in those dumps and let people know what was happening in Oakdale. Well, the Washington County landfill was only a few miles away in Lake Elmo, and a lot of the same chemicals were in there. But unfortunately, because no thorough study was done in the 80s, when they found those wastes, they didn't know about the PFCs. So this problem, which should have been caught in the 80s, early 80s, has continued on unabated. And so
let us understand this a little bit better. 3M told folks about those wastes in Oakdale in the 80s, but not about the same kinds of waste in Washington County landfill in the 80s.
Yes, I'd be happy to give you a copy of this document. It's the St. Paul Megaphone. It's a 3M company publication.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it says that since first contacted by the NCCA, 3M has been cooperating fully with that agency, both in conducting its own investigation of 3M's waste disposal history in Oakdale and in providing information to the NCCA. In addition, 3M representatives have participated in informational meetings of Oakdale City Council in order to answer residents' questions.
And Jim, again, the date on this document?
The date on this document is December 6, 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, a thorough investigation was not made at that time of what was in the site. And a reasonable review of the entire area, because this is a very close proximity situation, that also was done. And therefore, this problem continued to fester. And I have copies of water tests that my wife and I requested that be done during that time period. Here's a water test from 1983 to us at our home. But guess what? There's no test for PFCs on it. I'd be happy to give you a copy of that. And at that point, they should have known about the PFCs. Therefore, my family and I have been drinking tainted water. Yes. Here's a couple of them. I didn't bring that many with, but... Yeah, here's the article. Right here. So, my wife and I had a great place to raise kids, but we didn't know we were drinking tainted water. And the state was telling us it was okay. And so we were going along merely thinking we were doing fine. And so then I think the next insult was that the state told us in October 29th, 1999, they would no longer test our water because it was not possible for any contamination from landfill to get to us. And here it is in writing from the MPCA. Then in 2006, they come back to us and say, they come onto our property without permission and test our water and tell us, I'm sorry, your water is contaminated. And guess what's in it? PFBAs. And my wife and I have had our blood levels tested for these things. And guess what's elevated? PFBAs. So, we're just one of many citizens in the area. We're just trying to live our lives, be good citizens, be careful, be diligent and try to find out what's happening, try to protect our health. And all along, we feel we've been drinking tainted water. And then I've, you know, done more research on the question, and you know, I even went to the 3M and showed them on the I Nation site where my wife's family used to live that they had bulldozed two wells that were within a half mile of all the pollution over there. They just bulldozed them. I made them find the wells, relocate them, put new heads on them, and test them. I mean, we tried to do everything we can to be safe. And we, even if we didn't predate the landfill, which our family, my wife's family did, we should have the expectation that the pollution on the landfill and contained in the landfill would stay in the landfill. I think that's a reasonable expectation. I think that's what we should expect from a situation like that. So we're just one of many, many people who've been impacted, who've been drinking water. Again, remember, these tests didn't exist because they didn't discover what was really in the Oakdale contaminated area. So it's really been a very unfortunate situation. And again, my wife and I have tried to be very diligent in what we've been doing out there.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Blackford, for coming forward. What I'm trying to understand, and I really appreciate and your frustration about not knowing about the PFCs in time, but Madam Chair, if I remember right, and I'm wondering if MPCA can comment, I thought that we'd been told we haven't been able to test for those, that it was a new test that's only been discovered in the last few years, mm-hmm. that we were actually on the forefront of our state, I thought, was on the forefront of learning how to test for these. So I think that's why... And I guess I'd want to hear from MPCA. The reason we didn't tell you a decade or two ago is because we didn't know how to test for them. Certainly, I hope not because it was any willful intent. And I'm wondering if we can get MPCA to comment on that, or is that not the right time?
Representative McNair, I think what we'll do is have Representative Bunn's testifiers complete their testimony because there are going to be lots more questions.
Okay.
And so save your question because QPA okay. will come up and we will have them answer your question and all the others that are out here. This procedure, I think, will go faster this way. Representative Moore.
Thank you, Chair Levine. Just a quick technical question, Mr. Blackford. You said that they came and told you that your water wasn't safe to drink. It wasn't the Pollution Control Agency, right? Wasn't it the Department of Health?
That's correct.
Yeah, okay. And did they say, thank you, I'll pass it on. And their recommendations to you were what? Just not drink your water and
go on bottled water.
Yeah, and just, you know, kind of tough, or they didn't really, and no further recommendations to you other than just not drink it.
Charcoal filter, bottled water. My feeling was the moment that the state discovered that my water had been polluted by the landfill the state was responsible for, they should have brought me public city water immediately at no charge. Connected me up. That still takes away my well, which I enjoy having a well, but I think that was a reasonable expectation that hasn't happened. And I do want to mention that the scientist who co-developed the PFBAs just died recently. She had notebooks full of chemical equations related to these chemicals. They knew what they created. They knew the chemical composition of what they created. They had it well documented. It was probably patented because it was a product. And this was all determinable stuff. If they had opened their archives and told people what was in these chemicals, they would have known how to test for them. But if you don't know if you don't know something's in a landfill, how do you know to test for it? But all these things were known and should have been discovered in the 80s when that oak hill was dug up.
I think that's one of the problems we have here, that EPA wants, I mean, 3M wants to say we have no responsibility here, and that perhaps legally they don't, but I suspect morally they do, because they knew about the Oakdale but didn't tell about the Washington County landfill. It's an interesting moral issue that we are wrestling with. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got some contamination issues in my area with vinyl chloride, and it actually volatilizes when you take a shower. Mm-hmm. Did they tell you not only do bottled water, but did they tell you what to do with anything else?
No, I mean, we're just using bottled water. We're bathing in the water. Otherwise, again, I'm not comfortable with it, but I really would prefer city water, but they say bathing in it, you don't absorb the PFCs like you do when you ingest them.
Yes, Representative Gardner, Madam Chair. We have been told that it does not volatilize in showers like many of the chemicals, and it's also not permeable to your skin if you bathe in it or swim in it and those kinds of things. So it does appear to be safer in those regards. Just for clarification, Mr. Blackford, is the state paying for your bottled water and or liner at this time, and or filter at this time?
The state is paying for the bottled water.
Yeah. Okay. Because we're getting off on this issue of when they knew what, and I think Representative McNamara gets to a good point that testing for these both in the environment and also in humans is more recent on this particular chemical. But in some ways, I'm looking at the GEMS document, and TCA can address this as well in their comments if they want to further if there's any errors in this. But I had another citizen who was adjacent to the site emailed me this week, too, who lived there the entire time the site's been there. And, you know, the TME was told at the time that this would be a mixed municipal solid waste landfill. But they believe, and it appears to be true, that, in fact, what occurred in that 69 to 75 period, in addition to mixed municipal solid waste, that has industrial chemicals were also put into this, legally or possibly illegally. This other citizen claims that, you know, there was in the middle of night truck runs to this site, and so he was, you know, suspicious that, you know, inappropriate dumping was also occurring at this site. We have no idea. He didn't suggest who that might be, but that, there may have been surreptitious dumping at this site, too. I'm not saying I know that's a fact, but this is a claim by one of the residents who was adjacent to this site, other than Mr. Blackford. So there may be several issues related to the kinds of waste that was put in either legally or possibly illegally to this site that did not really meet the definition of mixed solid waste, municipal waste, those kinds of definitions that was originally intended for. I'll ask Mr. Blackford to stay here for just a moment because he might want to add to this. I'd like to move on to the issue of, and I'm sure PC will address this later, but in that first meeting on number 15th, Ms. Meany was presented with a document that's in your packet that starts on page 1. It's called Remedy Feasibility Assessment. And this is the first time Ms. Meany saw the options that were available. And so page 3 of your document is the some of the options that were presented at that meeting. So it says it's top executive summary, and the options were, you know, do nothing is always an option that they include in their analysis, but the consultant looked at plasma torch, sports main, pump and treat on site, dig and truck, dig and line, etc. So these were some of the options. It's also the first time I, as a legislator, and others saw any price tags, you know, put with these options, and it's one of the only documents I've seen where it lists some price tags for these options. So they went over each of these options, a summary of them at the meeting, and then they talked about their recommended or their preferred option, which was the dig and line. So at the site in a staged way, starting possibly as early as this next summer over a 3 or so year period, that they would dig up portions of the site, put in a liner, and then re-entomb it or put it back in the site at that location. The next page, page 4 on your document, kind of gives their executive summary of how these various options were ranked with points by the consultant, a low number being good, high number being less good. And so as you can see, the dig and line option, the preferred option, had 14 points, which meant that had the best score. Next to that was the dig and truck option. So the PCA presented its arguments for the dig and line, fielded then and at other hearings, you know, questions about the dig and line. As you can see, there were a few other options that were cheaper that we rejected: pump and treat on site, etc. For its main, that essentially is pumping water out, either cleaning chemicals out on the site and then putting it back into the environment in that area, or pumping it away from that site at a longer distance and then filtering it somehow and then putting it through the sewers for various other kinds of things. I'll let them go because if that's necessary. But the key points for you, I think, in terms of all of this is that I mentioned earlier that previous sites had been kind of maxed in the $2 to $3 million range. As you can see from this sheet, the lowest one, I think, starts at, you know, almost $6 million, and it goes up from there, up to the highest that present, you know, $192 million just for the capital cost, not for the ongoing cost. At this meeting, most discussion has centered on the dig and line back at that site, the dig and truck away, or the plasma torch option. Much discussion occurred at that first meeting later about the plasma torch option. I won't go into the technology on this, but the issue here being it's a fairly new technology, but it's one that's a much more permanent solution, essentially kind of incinerates this waste. There are some emissions from that are of concern, so it's not perfect. And there are also many issues regarding what kind of waste, what condition the waste has to be in, the BTUs of waste, all those kinds of things. After that meeting, first of all, the price tag on that option assumed the plasma torch would be built just for this site at that location, so in my view it wasn't a real option or a real price. That clearly a very expensive technology like that would need to be built to use for several disposal sites, not just a one-time use for that site. So this is kind of a, you know, funny number here.
Let me just interject, just because I heard in the Energy Committee about a proposal at Hutchinson, and I see folks here from making that proposal to pass a torch leftover waste in that community. And I'm just interested at some point in knowing, have these communities, these two proposals, looked at each other?
On page 7 of your document, well, after that meeting, PCA responded they didn't think, based on what they knew at that time, this technology was a possibility for this kind of waste. It really wasn't being done in the United States yet, so they didn't know enough about it yet, and those kinds of things. Following that meeting, I and others really presented some questions and also encouraged them strongly to investigate this technology further. They did then do so, and maybe were in the process of doing so already because of some of these other proposals. At the time, on page 7 of your document, as a summary, PCA presented to our Keith Metro PSC Oversight Working Group, which is a subgroup of the Health and Human Services Policy Committee, just a couple weeks ago, that kind of summarized internationally and nationally where plasma torch technology was being used. When they get up, they can address the issue of, I did know about other proposals coming forward in the state from plasma torch. I'll just tell you briefly what PCA and also folks at 3M that work in the remediation area have said to me in the last several weeks regarding this. It is their view that this time, with the state of this technology, given the type of waste we're talking about here, which is really old waste with a lot of soil, low energy value, that number one, for sure to do it, you'd have to mix it with clean streams of waste. I mean, not buried already, waste that had higher energy value and other kinds of things. So you'd have to find other waste streams to mix. And their view, they do not see existence in the world currently examples where this has been successfully done for this kind of waste. So they are do not believe this is probably a viable option in the next 5 years for this kind of site. I and others, and I hope you as well, encourage them possibly even through some legislation to have our MPCA look to the future to see how we could have integrated regional systems to mix old waste and new waste, to employ this technology in a cost-effective way because it's a much more permanent solution to our waste problem. Also, if in the future we have to re-dig up some of these sites that exist because they are beginning to leak or the liners fail, this would be a great technology then to employ at that time to find a permanent solution. So I hope that beyond this meeting we can be working to push forward that and other technologies that are more permanent solutions. But that's what we've been told at this time regarding this type of site. So I'd be glad to hear about what the waste stream is at the other sites that we're speaking of and how they might be different or not different from this. So I did include that for your information. In terms of the other two main options, the dig in line, the bonding proposal, and I will get to the actual legislation and it's towards the end of this. The bonding proposal from the PCA that was in the governor's recommendation is specifically for the dig and reline option, which they estimate to be a capital cost of about $23 million, $15 from the proposal request they have, and $8 million that 3M voluntarily committed to it last spring as part of the remediation consent agreement. So that option appears to be approximately $23 million. It was raised in the last couple weeks of upgrading the liner. The liner in that $23 million cost was, I don't want to call it more, a more basic liner, but evidently there are more advanced liner systems that they use at hazardous landfill sites. These chemicals currently are not legally hazardous, the ones we're talking about at this site. And so that, I was just told yesterday, would be an additional approximately $2.5 million for that more high-grade liner, so in terms of the capital cost. In addition, as you see on this option sheet, the dig and truck option was listed at almost $67 million with a lower ongoing cost than the dig and line, but $67 million. I would be concerned, I think the state and you all should be concerned that if one was to pursue that option, and certainly it's an option that appears more permanent to my communities of Lake Elmo and Woodbury and the surrounding areas. This is a high-risk site for weather contamination. It's a gravel pit, it's permeable soils, it's fractured. Geologically, it's a high-risk of weather contamination site. There are other areas of our state and other lined landfills that are less risky than this site, so one could argue would it be appropriate to truck it to a more appropriate site without the fractures and the permeable soils that are safer and has solid clay under them rather than this kind of condition. If one was to do that, like I said, $67 million here. Last week, when they came up with that figure, they had in mind a particular site to truck it to when making that calculation. They now are looking at a different site that's an even safer site in Rosemont as a possibility for trucking this. I've now been conveyed in this information yesterday that they're estimating that site, taking it there, would cost $144 million. So we are again talking about a whole new ball game for remediation of sites. So again, if the state were determined, as I believe they should, that this should most likely not be reburied at that site, we are talking about a very large financial commitment for the state to protect the public health long-term and permanently for the people in this community. On that subject, I know we're covering a lot. Even if we remediate the site fully, you know, truck it away, or remediate the other sites we're talking about in the other communities, we still have all the PFCs in the soils and ground. We will still be leaching it into aquifers the years to come. We will just be kind of putting a stop to that process. It's not like the PFCs will disappear overnight. They'll be there for, you know, decades to come, but they'll be from the soils, not continuing to leak from those sites. So we do have a big challenge here with regard to these options. So we would like to have more permanent options still on the table going forward, but clearly the funding will be a challenge. Before we go to the bills and funding, thank you, Mr. Blackford, for coming up on that. I'd like to have Mayor Johnson and also Councilmember Johnson from Lake Elmo come up, and why don't you both come up at the same time just for Steve here. Again, to address the issue of the significance of this for the community of Lake Elmo.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing this issue. My name is Dean Johnston. I'm the mayor of the city of Lake Elmo. I would like to very, very quickly review the history of the site from the standpoint of what I consider to be a near crisis of public confidence. I am not among the people who would like to be critical of either 3M or the PCA for their role. I think over the last 40 years in general, people acted in good faith, but I think it's quite clear why the public is concerned about what has happened. And there are basically seven steps. 40 years ago, this landfill was sited on an environmentally sensitive area over three aquifers, and those aquifers were separated by a highly fractured rock which allowed chemicals to be transmitted among them or between them. Secondly, this site then was permitted for municipal waste, not industrial chemicals, and for reasons that are at least not known to the public, industrial chemicals were allowed to be placed into the landfill. Thirdly, the landfill, the chemicals and the waste in the landfill is actually sitting in the water table. Right, so that contributes substantially. If it's not in the water table, it's certainly within a couple of feet of a highly permeable soil. Fourth, the site was essentially unmanaged. We really don't know what's in the site. We now know, because we developed tests that we didn't have earlier, that it contains PFCs. But I managed an analytical laboratory for 5 years, and I know that you have to have an idea of what you're looking for if you're going to find it. And there may very well be chemicals there that we are not testing for and that we don't know that are there. Fifth, in the 1980s, I think in good faith, there was an effort to implement a pumping and air stripping operation for volatile organic compounds. And that was a very effective program at addressing the volatile organic. However, what it did was distribute the PFCs beyond where they normally would have been. So it in fact contributed to the problem of the PFCs rather than contributing to the solution. In the 1990s, a cap was installed over the top of the landfill, and yet the bottom remained unlined so that the chemicals continued to flow out through the bottom. Now, again, in good faith, we are looking at a solution called the dig and line option. And I have heard numbers anywhere from 20 years to 40 years for the anticipated life of that option. If I understand finance correctly, by about the time that the bonds are paid off, we will be in a position to address this problem all over again. Now, it's not the intention of the city of Lake Elmo to tell you what to do. And we're not the technical experts on this. All I can tell you is that the citizens are very, very concerned about the ability of government to manage this process, And what they're looking for is a permanent solution, not a solution that's going to have to be revisited again in 20 or 40 years. So I really think that the message from Lake Elmo that I've taken away from all of the public meetings is not we're looking for a specific solution, we're simply looking for a permanent solution. Thank you.
Thank you. I can't see who that is. Just go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. You said that the landfill gave 3M permission to dispose this substance in this landfill, thinking that it was a hazardous landfill, is that right?
I'm sorry if I said that. I didn't intend to. All I know is that non-residential waste were permitted to be disposed in the landfill, and I don't know what the process is or was, and the public clearly doesn't know what the process was that allowed that to happen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. 3M. Did they have to report what they were putting in this landfill in any way? And did they receive permission or not or whatever to do this? Or did they sneak it in at the middle of the night when nobody's looking?
No, I can't speak from first-hand information. I would defer that question to the people.
If they did it today, what would be the process if it was still open?
I believe there would be record steps, and there would be, you know, there. But I don't know. I really think that's not a question that I can address accurately. Well,
Thank you.
Representative, we're going to have PCA come up in a mere moment because we want to give them an opportunity to tell us what they're planning to do. But Representative Scalzi has, I think, the last question here, and then I think we need to move to 3M. To PCA. Is that okay?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mayor Johnson, can you tell me who operated that landfill, owned and operated it, and then can you also tell me the three aquifers that you mentioned?
The land is owned by the city of Lake Elmo. It was operated by Washington County, and I believe the Jordan, the Prairie du Chien, and the can you help me? I don't recall the name of the third aquifer. I'm sorry.
I think that's probably it. But we want to hear from the PCA on that. And that's, I hope they're listening to the questions that are being asked in the committee.
Okay. Madam Chair, I was going to have another city council member and the administrator from Oakdale, but I will defer to you that you need to move on.
Well, I'm just looking at the time, and I think you will want to, unless they have specific other things to add.
Sure.
I very much appreciate the issues that are being brought to the table. I think we need to hear every one of the issues.
Okay. Madam Chair, we'll pass on those two, but would you like me to just very briefly describe this legislation?
Actually, if we could have PCA come up, but if you would later remain there.
Yes.
And so that you make sure that all the questions on behalf of the community are being answered. If PCA would come up, please.
May I ask for the questions of them as well?
Absolutely. That is why I ask you if you'd stay there, please. Why don't you just sit at the table with them? This is a hearing about understanding, so that's what we're trying to do. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jeff Lewis. With me is Doug Day. I actually manage the closed landfill program at the MPCA, and Doug is a supervisor in the program. Representative Bunn has kind of done an excellent job of covering many of the talking points that I wanted to cover. Briefly, what I think I'd like to do is answer some of the questions that have been raised during the discussion, and then basically open it up for people to ask additional questions. One of the questions raised was about the PFC sampling. We were the first agency anywhere in the nation, the Coast Landfill Program, to do any PFC sampling. When we started sampling in the fall of 2004, We had to ship those samples to the one and only lab that could do PFC diagnostic work, and that was in Canada. And since that time, we have been extremely active in trying to identify the extent and magnitude of the PFC contamination that's been present. We have not been trying to hide from our responsibility in any shape, way, or form, and I think we've been on the leading edge of anyone in the nation as far as looking at this particular issue. We have presented to the public at a number of meetings, and Representative Bunn did include as part of the packet some of the information that we prepared in looking at the alternatives for what to do at the Washington County site. I've also included as part of your packet a fact sheet that we created, that we've used at public meetings that we've had on moving forward with a remedy at this site. There certainly are a number of options available that would probably be better options long term than the dig and line option that we're proposing as our preferred alternative. But as was stated, we try to live within our means and do work that we feel is responsible to take care of the problem, and feel that the $23 million project that we proposed is probably the most feasible alternative for this site. Certainly, if money was available, trucking it to a different location would probably be a preferred alternative, but we just did not feel that we had the wherewithal to come up with the money that would be required to do that. As Representative Bunn has said, the majority of the work that we've done on the landfills that are in the program have been at a much smaller scale. We do have a couple of large projects that we've completed in the last couple of years that have been in the $10 to $12 million range. This would be by far the largest expenditure of money on trying to fix one of the contaminated sites that we have in our program. And we do have 112 landfills that we're responsible for. All of these sites basically started out as old dumps. Most of them were always done in locations that people felt had little value. So most of the dumps that we inherited into this program were either in wetland areas, were in old gravel pits, or ravines along rivers where people didn't feel that they were able to use it for any other purpose. Most of these sites were in use before they came to the agency for permitting, and at the time, in the early or late 60s, early 70s, we certainly didn't have any idea on the consequences of what was being permitted that we currently have today. Within our program, we have over 6,000 monitoring points that we have at our 112 landfills. We spend a lot of time and effort trying to make sure that we can characterize and understand the pollution problems that are occurring at those sites. One of the other concerns that we did have with a dig and truck option is the amount of truck traffic that that would actually cause. We have about 2.5 million cubic yards of material to deal with at the Washington County landfill. To pick that up in conventional trucks and haul it to a different location, you're talking somewhere between 80 and 160,000 truckloads that would be needed. The wide range is based on the time of the year and what your load capacity is for those trucks. We have provided a lot of the historic information of the program as far as the financial components of it to Mr. Reinholz. We just did that recently, late last week, and some more information to him yesterday to try and help stimulate some of the discussion. I know that was kind of a last-minute submittal on our part. I did also provide to the members a spreadsheet in the packet that shows future construction activities that we're proposing within the program. We have about 14 different sites that we still have construction work to do at. Most of those are bond eligible sites, but a couple of the larger ones are not. We you have about $31.4 million in anticipated construction at bond-eligible sites left to do, and we have a total of about $88 million in construction work that we want to try and complete by the year 2012. At that time, we're really hoping this program can shift into more of an operation and maintenance mode, where most of the construction work will be done at these landfills, and we'll try and deal with ongoing issues at those sites at that time. One of the other questions that has been asked of us is, how come we need more than the $90 million that was originally appropriated to the program? At the time this program was started in 1994, we had anticipated about 71 sites that were going to be bond eligible. Since that time, through two legislative amendments in 2000 and 2001, there have been four additional sites that are bond eligible that have been added to the program, and there have been about 20 other sites that were originally private ownership that have been basically given to the state that would now make them bond eligible. So the number of sites that we're dealing with that are bond eligible went up drastically since this program began in 1994. The other component that really has impacted our ability to complete our work, as Madam Chair had mentioned, when the program was first envisioned, there was kind of a three-legged stool of funding that was proposed to fund the program and for the construction work we needed to do. At that time, there was a solid waste tax that was put into place to generate money. There was the bonding capability that was authorized. And then there was a third item that was an insurance recovery effort where when we inherited the policies of insurance carriers at these sites, many of them had pollution responsibilities as part of those policies, and we went after those insurance companies to try and collect money as part of that effort. We've been fairly successful in the insurance recovery. We've brought a little over $70 million into the state coffers for the Environmental Fund and Remediation Fund through that effort. But one of the legs of the stool with the financing coming from the solid waste tax has been impacted by various legislative actions as well. Through the years 2003 through 2007, when the state was in, I guess I'll say, somewhat severe financial problems, a number of cancellations were made from the Remediation Fund and the Environmental Fund, where approximately $92 million that would have been eligible to fund activities within this program were transferred back to the general fund or used for other purposes. That severely limited our ability to do construction work using the solid waste tax monies that get deposited into the environmental fund, and has enhanced our dependence on bonding as a method for paying for our work. Part of the solid waste tax still gets deposited in the general revenue fund, about 30% of that, and it was always our understanding that those monies were being deposited in the general revenue fund so that we could do bonding and those bonds be paid back from the general fund. I don't know the number of dollars that actually get generated and deposited into the general fund, but I think it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $15 million a year. If we would have had that $15 million available to us to do work in this program, we would never have had the bond. So we've tried to do the best we can given the restrictions that we have to operate under. And I guess I'd be more than happy to answer questions of the group.
We're going to do some questions. Representative Scalzi, Representative Gartner, Representative McNamara, Representative Wolf. Let's start with Representative Scalzi. You had asked about which aquifers, and that was not answered.
Thank you, Ms. Chair, for reminding me. I forgot. I was wondering which were the three aquifers. I think he mentioned Jordan, Prairie, Duchesne. I mean, he mentioned Jordan, Prairie, Duchesne, and we weren't sure about the third one.
You know,
the third aquifer that's actually impacted at this site is the St. Peter. Basically, anytime you're doing well construction, there's typically a series of aquifers that you can tap in any given site. At this particular location, there are those three aquifers are all impacted. Because of the fractured nature, the PFC contaminants move freely through the different layers that are present. There is a deeper aquifer that they can tap. It's extremely expensive to go down to the Franconian. The well depths in this area would be 500 feet plus, and it adds drastically to the cost of constructing wells.
Are all of these drinking water aquifers current drinking water aquifers?
Madam Chair, yes, all of those are considered drinking water aquifers. Some of them are tapped mainly for small domestic wells, and typically the municipal wells are deeper and try and tap into the deeper aquifers where the higher production and hopefully safer water conditions exist.
Hopefully. The Franconia, is that used for drinking water now, or is that an expectation of future use?
Madam Chair, I don't know all of the details about the area. I do think that there's very little water use out of the Franconian at the present time. I do know there have been some wells that have been drilled in this particular area where there wasn't any other option available. And so I do know it does provide a drinking water supply at the current time, but I don't think many of the municipalities are tapping into it.
Have you tested those particular wells for PFAs?
Madam Chair, we have probably sampled within our program alone over 400 wells, both domestic as well as municipal. I think the number of total wells that we've worked on in conjunction with the Department of Health is probably over 1,000 that have been sampled. As part of our work, we've also contracted with the Minnesota Geological Survey, who have provided a lot of information to us, showing some of the history of the area with the well construction and how the well construction in that area has kind of added to the contamination movement into the different aquifers.
So my question was, have you specifically tested the wells that are in the Franconia?
We have sampled, I think, a very few number of wells into the Franconian. I do believe we've only sampled three different wells that are currently in the Franconian, and we have not found any PFC contamination at all in the Franconian.
Obviously, part of what we need to do is protect that aquifer. I mean, that is the whole issue about the closed landfill program, was protecting drinking water. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had two questions. The first is, I think maybe you referenced it, but was it 2003 when the governor unallotted something like $10 million from the solid waste fund that was designated for landfill cleanup purposes?
Madam Chair and Representative Gardner, there's been kind of an ongoing cancellation, I guess is the appropriate term, of monies. In fiscal year 2003, there was an $11 million cancellation as part of the laws of that particular year from the Solid Waste Fund that would have been available for our use that was canceled back to the general fund.
Madam Chair, I bring that up because we used to have a cash balance in the fund that would have helped address this issue, and it was used to balance the budget. On this fact sheet, if I could just do a follow-up, the MVCA capital budget sheet we have, it says, for responsible parties with insurance, the state was authorized to recover costs directly and solely from insurance companies, and you've discussed that. The state has recovered a substantial amount through settlements with insurance companies to help pay for landfill cleanup by the MPCA. It didn't specifically say whether you've recovered any insurance money related to the Washington County landfill. And you go on to say that the reopening of Superfund claims in landfills instead of using the closed landfill cleanup program could have a negative impact on your insurance recovery program. I guess I'm trying to understand is, you know, if we decided to scrap the CLP situation here and go to the Superfund method, which would force the state to look at everybody put waste in a landfill, would that be take longer to address? Would it be more costly versus the insurance recovery? I mean, have you recovered $1 million for this particular landfill, or zero, or $20 million? We're just trying to figure out who's paid into that more or less already.
Madam Chair and Representative Gardner, there's kind of two aspects to that question. When we made settlements with insurance companies as part of this, most of those insurance companies had policies that covered a number of different landfills. And so what we did is we reached global settlements with those insurance companies covering all sites in the program. We never got to the point of trying to differentiate coverage at one site versus the other. We were basically approaching them as global settlements. Through those global settlements, there's been a total of $113 million that those insurance companies that we negotiated with paid to us. A fair enough amount of that money has gone to the attorneys, the special attorneys that were hired to try and collect this money for us. And the remainder was what I mentioned earlier was deposited into the Environmental and Remediation Fund. But if we were to go back and try and use a Superfund scenario, we're very concerned about what impact that would have on those settlements that we had reached with those insurance companies and whether they would then try and get back monies that they've already paid to the state of Minnesota.
Okay. Representative Gardner, when the initial dollars were, the estimates were made for the cleanup of the landfill, the estimates were based solely on the money coming from the tax on waste and the bonding. There was no insurance recovery included in those dollars because it was so speculative whether there would be any insurance recovery. I mean, there were many, many people saying that's impossible, it will never happen. So those dollars were never included in the estimates of what would be needed in the future. So all of that money, that $70 million, is a super bonus. So given that, we should be better on track to take care of the problems that we're having. However, now we see that money has been taken away from this fund, and so we had additional money going in that we didn't expect to go in, and money taken out. And I think that we're going to have to have from our super fiscal analyst doing a spreadsheet for us that I hope you can have available. Could you do that on Thursday for us?
Madam Chair, yes, I can put together a spreadsheet with details on that.
I think that's important for us to have because we are right now speculating on the money, and we don't know the answer to another question. Then I will get to you, Representative McNamara. Do you feel that there may be other sites out there that have been capped and you consider closed and in a maintenance mode that might present problems, maybe not like this one, but have similar consequences and costs?
Madam Chair, as part of our long-range financial obligation that we try to prepare for this program, we do try to factor in a certain amount of money that we call our risk probable, which does try and get that issue of what other unanticipated expenditures we might have in the program. We're required to prepare a annual obligations memo, and in that obligations memo we have a fair amount of money that is that we try to set aside or at least anticipate for future type problems like you mentioned. The two sites that we're currently most interested in working on, the Mille Lacs County Landfill and the Washington County Landfill, are both sites that we actually thought we were done with, that we had implemented remedies at those two sites, and things do happen at these landfills to change our ability to make sure we're controlling the risk from them. In this particular case, a new chemical that nobody knew about came to the forefront that was something we never anticipated looking for. And in the Mille Lacs County case, there was a change in the groundwater flow direction where now a well is being impacted when in the past it wasn't. So things do occur. These are not stagnant systems. It's part of the reason that we try and spend so much of our efforts on monitoring what's going on.
I must agree with you that you could not have anticipated the problem coming from 3M. The question that continually reoccurs in my mind is, did 3M anticipate that problem? And it seems to me that we have further documentation that says that they should have anticipated that problem and let us know. And that's very, very troubling. Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question for any one of the testifiers or maybe somebody else from MPCA in the audience centers around the system that we could use about halfway between Representative Osmond's house and my house is I'm trying to think of it's a spot operated by SKB where they bring in material with a triple liner system. And it's private enterprise figured out a way so that they're insured for, I would never want to say forever, but they feel relatively comfortable and have been able to get insurance companies to back up what they're doing with a triple safe system. And I'm wondering, Madam Chair, it's troubling to hear that when one of the testifiers mentioned, are we doing something that in 25 years we may have to reevaluate. I'm wondering if we have talked with, for instance, like SKB, potentially about the opportunities that would be presented us, and maybe that would get the state's liability. Maybe there's a way we can move it just like they have in the landfill down near our home with all kinds of collection systems. And it seems, Madam Chair, when we talk about trucking and the cost to truck, if we're able to go into a triple line system where we really have a more safe feeling, I'm wondering if we've completely evaluated that and just had discussions with folks like SKP as a private contractor to look at that option. I mean, it's going to be a private contractor to do the work. I know MPCA is not going to go hire backhoes and dump trucks and laborers to start rolling out liner. But I'm thinking that with the cost of trucking, have we really looked at that opportunity?
Madam Chair and Representative McNamara, we did, as part of the comments that were raised during some of the public input, look at that option of an enhanced liner. The SKB facility at Rosemont does basically have a triple liner system that pretty much meets the requirements for a hazwave facility. They have a compacted clay layer on the bottom, and they have a plastic liner, a drainage layer in between, and then another plastic liner. So in a hazwave situation, you basically have a triple liner system. We looked at the potential of putting that in place as part of our dig and line It would cost us about additional $2.5 million to do that, and it would provide an additional layer of protection. We did evaluate, or at least contact SKB, as far as what it would cost to truck our waste to their facility, and the $144 million figure was what we received from them if we were to truck our material to their site. Now, we didn't have any discussions with them on if there was some way we could get a better deal from them, if they constructed a cell for us someplace on that location, and maybe that's something in additional. If the committee would really like us to explore that option, we'd be more than happy to look at that. We have had discussions with the Attorney General's office that advised us on this program as well. They have a little concern about the liability that we might have if we truck that material to somebody else's site, and whether that would open us up in the future for liability claims. If something did happen or not, I guess I don't know. I'm just taking the advice of our attorneys, whose job it is to do that, who have told us they have concerns about us trucking it to a different location.
Because it's McNamara, it was coming near the end of the time, and I want to ask if there are anybody in the public in the audience that would like to say anything. And here's the other thing we're going to do, Representative Malaisi, we're going to put you on the list. What we will do is Representative Bunn has a bill, and we're going to put that on the schedule for Thursday morning, and we're going to ask if PCA would work with our fiscal analyst so we can see all the numbers and what it's going to take to get all of these jobs done. I mean, we just don't have a spreadsheet that pulls all the numbers together, so it's still difficult for us to make recommendations without that. So can I get your commitment to work with our fiscal analyst who knows how to do all these things and make it very readable for all of us so we have some options on the table on Thursday?
Madam Chair, we'd be more than happy to work with Mr. Reinhold and look forward to his ability to put numbers together in a meaningful way.
Well, I have every confidence there. It's Representative McNamara, Representative Moe, and then we'll hear from folks in the audience.
Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up. I would ask if we could get MPCA to contact some of the private contractors that may be in this business to look at the opportunity to explore a triple liner in the vicinity and see what that would impact would have on the cost. That may be our most cost effective. And I would hope that we could get it ASAP so that we can move forward with this very important project in a way to protect the citizens.
Okay, that is hopefully we can get the PCA can give us some guidance on that on Thursday, Representative Moe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in follow up to Representative McNamara's question, the mayor very eloquently asked us if this is a permanent solution, that we come up with a permanent solution, and maybe the PCA could comment really quickly on this, as opposed to by the testimony it's obvious that we've kicked this ball down the field for many years now. Is this going to give us 20 years and then we got to deal with it again? So I guess when we come forward with our spreadsheet of options, I don't think it makes any sense for us to invest this kind of money in 20 years.
Okay. We will then make sure that that is set up, that the timelines are on that spreadsheet. Would that be helpful? All right. Representative Bunn, and then we'll hear from the audience.
This is backtracking briefly, but I want to ask the question because I think it was on many of our minds, and I know it hasn't been addressed to our locals appropriately. The issue of this originally being permitted as a mixed solid waste municipal waste landfill, and then we find out that, you know, various kinds of industrial waste from different parties were also disposed of here, and the question was asked earlier, you know, how did that happen? Was that legal, potentially something illegal? How did that occur under this program, under this permitting process?
Madam Chair and Representative Bunn, this site was permitted as mixed municipal solid waste facility. the rules in place at the time allowed for industrial waste to be brought to that site. Has this waste were supposed to be disclosed and tested before they were deposited, but most other industrial waste were permitted to be deposited there. Our records indicate that about 70% of the waste brought to this site was mixed municipal household garbage, and about 30% of it was from industrial waste.
Did 3M disclose at the time that it was putting waste into the site?
Madam Chair, 3M is listed on all of the early documents of records for direct hauling material to the site. So to answer your question, yes. I do not know, other than them disclosing that they are bringing waste to it, how much information was provided on the types of waste or the fate and transport of them. 3M disclosed to us in the fall of 2004 that they took waste that contained PFCs to the Washington County landfill, and that's why we started testing for it in the fall of 2004.
I think there's some legal questions beyond the normal legal questions of a closed landfill program and responsibility here, because obviously they had some knowledge previous to the closed landfill program, and then let us know in 2004. I think that is a question for the Attorney General's office that's beyond the question of Minnesota's legally taking over the responsibility of the landfill.
Madam Chair, just briefly, I think you characterized it extremely well before, and it's actually the same answer we've gotten from Alan Williams, our attorney that advises us in the program. And that 3M is not legally responsible, but definitely has some moral obligation. And I do believe that's probably part of the reason why they were willing to commit $8 million to help fix this problem.
I have a great deal of respect for Alan Williams, and he actually was helpful in writing the landfill bill. He's probably one of the best attorneys that the state has ever hired. And I think there is this moral obligation that we need to discuss as a community, whether members of the community should pay for to protect the drinking water when 3M clearly had some knowledge and should step up to the plate beyond the $8 million, because it's obviously going to cost far more to protect our drinking water than $8 million. I think, did you have any other questions, Representative Fox? You will have another opportunity. Are there questions? These folks in the audience, I mean, we are past our time, but this is a significant issue because drinking water is a significant issue. Is there somebody here that would like to just say a few words? Unfortunately, I think some of these drinking water issues are capable of repeating themselves, and so to the extent we can understand them, we can prevent them in the future, and that's what we're trying to do here.
Okay.
Yes, welcome to the committee. We just have a very brief time, if you could just make a brief statement for us.
I'm Len Frame. I'm the founder and still chairman of Phoenix Solutions Company. We're a Minnesota corporation. We have been in business for 55 years. We are the largest supplier in the United States of plasma equipment, and I think we're the largest in the world. You have many of our sites on the plasma review that's in Representative Bond, pardon me, and forgive me, I'm in so much of a hurry, I forgot, Madam Chair, that we are identified on three of those sites, and there are six more of those sites that use our equipment. So of the summary that you have, we have provided the plasma equipment for 9 of those projects. It would really be presumptuous of me to offer solutions on a problem that I know so little about, but I would chance to offer a couple of suggestions about direction. Plasma is the permanent solution, and plasma is available to you now. It is not a future technology to be applied in 5 years or whatever. The problem you have is obviously classic. That is, to get the right solution, a permanent solution, with an affordable amount of money. I can put this, I think, most quickest and best if I simply put it this way. If you were a customer of ours coming to us for equipment with this problem, this is what we would do. We would first take your material and go through some analytical procedures that we have developed for waste and hazardous waste, et cetera, and their destruction in plasma. We would determine from those analytical procedures what, and from our judgment and other things, what the throughput could be of the system. Pounds per hour per kilowatt of installed capacity. We would then, if that warranted, go to a subscale test, which we have done. We've done it for PCBs, we've done it for mustard, we've done it for asbestos. This particular material is different, but it is not new within the range of chemistry. And we would also go and talk to some private developers who are in the plasma destruction business, if you will. And between those folks and probably the SKV people, we would put together a proposal that would involve private funding, private operation, I believe that within the dollars that you are talking about, $30 million, that a plasma system can be installed, and the question becomes one that within the community of whether you have to destroy in 2 years or 3 years or 4 years. And that is not an issue we can deal with. That's the issue you have to deal with. Thank you. I'll take any questions that I can deal with in the time that's available to them.
Well, unfortunately, we don't have any more time available because there's another committee coming in here. And I'm afraid we can't do any more testimony just because there is another committee coming in here. But I think perhaps you all will visit with PCA, and Representative Max never brought up another. I mean, this is a problem-solving committee, that is for sure. And so there's some things put on the table, and this is not our last discussion. So with that, we will adjourn the meeting.